Well, tonight, back by popular demand, John Hoag, and tonight we'll talk with his predictions for 2009, a glimpse of 2010, and also his continuing work on Nostradamus. John Hoag on Coast to Coast AM. Well, if you're brand new to the program, let me tell you a little bit about our guest tonight, John Hoag. He writes on the subjects of the occult, parapsychology, mysticism, and prophecy, and he is considered a world authority on Nostradamus and a best-selling author. His work has brought him international acclaim. Now, he's been published in 18 languages. He's appeared on more than 700 radio and television shows on three continents, and he's back on Coast to Coast AM. John, how are you?
Oh, I'm doing great, George.
You know, I look at this 700 radio and television shows, and 600 of them might have been Coast to Coast.
Well, I started doing the five-hour marathons way back in 1994 with Art. And actually, I should update that. I stopped counting around 700. I'm sure it's over 1,000 now.
Oh, my gosh. Times are changing, John Hoag, aren't they?
Yes. Very, very interesting times.
Let's do you want to do a little review of 2009, some of those predictions?
Yeah, a lot of these predictions were introduced when my ebook came out, which I do every around any time between the end of December or the Chinese New Year, around February 1st. I think that was the last time we did a show on predictions. And a lot of the things that were in the book we talked about, and here's some of the ones that came true. You know, I talked about how in early March, Obama would have three international crises taken care of. Well, he had the Somali pirates hijacking.
Yep.
He had the Taliban taking Swat Valley and threatening the government of Pakistan, and the stock market plunged to its lowest numbers into the 6,000s during the worst days of the AIG bailout scandal. Those are three crises that he had to deal with in March. The other one that was kind of a long shot, I said the party of waspish values needs more color and contrast, and it will gain it. The new Republican national chairman will be an African-American. Well, Michael Steele, former congressman, became the RNC.
Yeah, you're right on that one.
I really thought that was going to be a long shot. Sooner or later, Obama and his team will have to deliver novel and revolutionary ideas. Jump-starting the economy isn't a new idea. It does not address the core cancers, the tumors of our bad business practices, and habits that will bring on terminal depression in 2 years. I wrote that at the end of 2008. And basically, that's an ongoing theme in the new book, Predictions for 2010, because the systemic issues, even tonight, listening to the speech, the first State of the Union address, I got a very strong sense that Washington is not listening to what's going on outside of it.
And also, you also talked about the fact that Treasury Secretary Timothy Geithner might not remain in the cabinet. And sure enough, over the past week or so, people are beginning to sense there's a very minor rift here between Geithner and the president.
Well, in early 2009, we talked about that. In that book, I said that I thought that he would not finish the first term, that he would be dismissed, because I said on your show that he is too much a part of the problem, this systemic lack of insight into what is wrong. And that is one of the biggest problems that the country faces. And the probation that I said in the book is that if the Obama administration does not actually jump on these things but wastes a year getting things done and not really dealing with these core problems like bank reform, that was a big issue we talked about back on February 1st, 2009, then I predicted that they would not deal with the bank reform, which is fundamental to getting loans freed up for stimulus for the jobs of the middle class. I said they wouldn't do that. I looked at Timothy Geithner and thought, man's insider in this. And that was a rather kicking us into a future possibility, which unfortunately we're still on this path. And the path we're on is by the end of this year, we're going to see some kind of inflationary crisis in the world. And it's, I've said as far back in even earlier shows when I did predictions for 2008, which I wrote in the early end of 2007, said that there was going to be a global recession. And that was at a time when people weren't really thinking about it as a huge global recession, the size of the worst since the Depression. But I said back then on your show, I said, we have 2-year probation. We have 2 years to really take a look at this and turn around the core problems in our economic perceptions in the world. And if we don't do it, then we're going, existence is going to give us another big shock. And then hopefully, I mean, the 21st century is about evolutionary crisis.
And we're in all of it right now, Jim.
And it, you know, I'm kind of hoping that once a person gets nailed with a stick, after a while he'll say, ow. And then after a while he'll say, I don't want to be hit with a stick anymore. I'm going to change something. I'm going to get my head out of the way of the stick of destiny rather than stick it right in front of the stick. And that means that I felt was rather ominous feeling when I, from what I call my oracle that I do this work with, which oftentimes goes against my own personal views, politically and otherwise.
Sure.
But over the years, it's just been accurate, and I have to accept its message and send it. And when I look at what happened in the State of the Union with all the backslapping, cheering, and hearing almost the same statements that were made a year ago being repeated again, I see a disconnect which sets us on a course that not only I've been seeing, but a number of prophets, American prophets through history, even back in the 19th century, have been warning that we could be, if we, and I'm saying this so that we won't be, but it has to be stated now, that it, another 10 years of the same old backbiting, the same old Washington disconnect, the same old two-party duopoly, which is shutting down things getting done, we are heading for civil war or revolution in the 2020s.
Interesting that you say that, John, because as you know, remember that time traveler story we've been following for years, the John Teeter story, where he predicted, whoever he may be, that there would be a civil war in the United States based on incredible civil unrest. So I find that fascinating that you feel that way, too.
Well, you know, it's whether this person is actually a time traveler or he just reads prophecy like
exactly.
I do.
Exactly.
The prophecies that I'm speaking of, I'm pulling them up right now, are been around since 1888 in the case of David Goodman Crowley, who was quite remarkable prophet, the journalist who made predictions in the latter half of the 19th century about America, and many of them came true. Some of these are kind of interesting. Like one thing he said in 1888 is a body of censors will be created who will be responsible for policing the United States legislation at all levels. It's like watchdog groups. It says, because our Constitution is so inflexible, we will not be able to reform it. Instead, under the pressure of radical changes and perhaps a social war, we will adopt a new Constitution. Now, a date was given to that by Barbara Hughes, a seer in Chicago, who's also had a lot of accuracy. She basically stated that by the mid-2020s, the United States will have gone through this and had to reform and rewrite the U.S. Constitution. But to get further on your idea of social unrest, actually Brigham Young and Orson Pratt, Mormon leaders, the early Mormon church, have probably, along with Edgar Casey even, some of the more detailed descriptions of, this is what I'm about to read, is something we should not have happen.
All right, go ahead.
So I read it to prevent it. It says, nation will rise against nation, said Brigham Young, kingdom against kingdom, states against states, in our own country and in foreign lands. This is this balkanization theme that is common in a lot of prophecy, that our ability to sustain our society as it evolves into a global system, but we keep trying to keep it in this myopic, nationalistic, or narrow construct, is a very common theme of warning amongst prophetic traditions that is really sounding quite modern now, that we're heading for this kind of disruption. It's not World War III, it's World War Free for All. If we cannot sustain the food, if the climate goes out of control, these things start happening. And Orson Pratt chased what Brigham Young said by describing that future civil war in America, is what then will be the condition of the people when the great and terrible civil war shall come? It will be very different from the war between the North and the South, that is in America, the Confederates and the Union. It will be a war of neighborhood against neighborhood, city against city, town against town, country against country, state against state, it's county against county, and they will go forth destroying and being destroyed. Manufacturing will, in great measure, cease for a time among the American nation.
Feels like now, John.
Yeah, I'm not saying these things to frighten people, but to sound an alarm that will challenge this tendency, because that's all future is, in my experience, 30 years of doing this. And it's backed up by what Nostradamus wrote in his writings. It's very clear that he gave alternative futures. So it is not written in stone. These warnings are not to make you afraid. They're made to challenge you to do the things that will prevent what Orson Pratt is saying, Brigham Young, Edgar Cayce, David Goodman Crowley, Nostradamus, and all these people when they're telling you a dire future.
You have said that 2009 is the year of terrible twos. What does that mean?
Yeah, the 2008, everybody is getting very excited with the whole 2012 intrigue, but 2012 is just one year dated in one tradition, the Mayan calendar. But there are half dozen other major prophetic time cycles that are clocking in and rebooting. And one of the more significant ones that people didn't talk about in my field except me, and you could already, if you look back in 2008, a lot of things started changing, and in fact, change actually became the motto of the year for the political situation as well. And that is the year that the Aquarian Age in predictive astrology, the New Age,
which is what we're in now, right?
Yeah, it's a 20th century era. We just come out of the Piscean Age, which means that at this point, it takes about 250 years for an age to fully influence history's direction. We've just tipped the scales now for the first time in 2008, where the future gets a little more influence in our lives than the past.
Have you ever seen a time period, John, in your history? And you know, you're an expert with Nostradamus as well, so you know those go way back. Have you ever seen a time period where things seem to be so in flux at this point, so mixed up, what's up is down, what's down is up?
Yes, I've seen this period and been writing about it since I began publishing articles in 1983 and writing my first of 16 books in 1986. It has been a thread in my work, long before it was actually a part of our lives. And it is something that I've been trying to explain to people, especially at the final decades of the Piscean Age, where the projection was to look at the Aquarian Age in this kind of airy-fairy veneer of kind of dreamland Piscean ideas, mm-hmm. and mystical. And I kept having to say, the Aquarian Age is an age of chaos and change. It's not an age of faith and dreams, but of a time to stop dreaming and wake up.
Chaos is not a good word to me. How about you?
Chaos is a reality that order grows out of. I mean, Nietzsche made the famous statement, out of chaos, stars are born. I look at chaos or order as just such as the case realities, as I am a meditator, a practitioner of the science of self-observation, I try to watch my judgments of a word or thing to just see it as it simply is. Such is the case that chaos always seeks order, and eventually entropy brings chaos back. And this also plays in the cycles of our history. And much of what's successful in predicting the future requires one to be sensitive to the patterns that are repeated through history.
Do you, when you have interpreted Nostradamus' quatrains, do you see him talking about this very strange period we're in right now?
He has left, certainly a lot of his prophecies are open to interpretation, but hundreds of them tend to have a very modern veneer to his symbolic language. What is important to me is to see how many of his astrological predictions, which look at certain rare configurations that don't happen very often, seem to look at 2008 and 2009 as a critical important period. Certainly his date of 1999, where a great king of terror would descend from the sky, and the word he uses for terror, if you link all the quatrains, the four-line poems, that and put them together with that word, it all looks like pieces of a puzzle to a story that sounds like what he would call the third Antichrist.
Right.
The times of a war between the West and Islamic extremism, because a lot of the word games that he uses and classical codes allude to the Middle East as the main theater of this event. Unlike the first two Antichrists, Napoleon, Napoleon, and Hitler. And with it in his language, his common thread is confusion, upheaval, a disruption of social behavior, economic behavior. He has prophecies about a time when the paper notes, which were not even common in his time, would not even be worth the wood to burn them.
Well, we're getting close to that now, aren't we, John?
It is. We are getting close. We're getting close to danger, and as we get close to it and see it more clearly, I'm hopeful that we will step aside and let danger pass. But I did not see or hear tonight an indication from the leaders of this country that they get it, what is happening. They felt more like people in their own insulated world, insulated as the Russian Duma, as insulated as the ancient regime of the French and Louis XVI, as insulated as George III was with the problems the colonials across Atlantic were having with his regime. It is, again, a repetition and cycle that is so common in prophecy and history, whether it's past history or future history. We are in one of those periods where revolution is around the corner in the next decade. I hope, I pray, that it is a peaceful Jeffersonian revolution, which we are capable of doing without bloodshed.
It all depends on how frustrated they become, John.
People are very frustrated, and the platitudes and the patronizing that of both sides in this situation tells me that the road to revolution is paved by people who just pave it with their words and not their actions.
When we come back in just a moment on Coast to Coast AM, we'll talk more with John Hoag about his predictions for 2010. As I've said, he is predicting that Barack Obama will win re-election. We'll find out why he believes that as well, and so much more. I'm George Norrie, and this is Coast to Coast AM. Well, the last hour of the program tonight, we'll take your phone calls with John Hoag, but lots more to talk with him about when we come back. Hey, by the way, are you a member of StreamLink? For just pennies a day, you get your iPhone apps, podcasting, archives, and just have some fun. Just go to coasttocoastam.com for StreamLink. And welcome back to Coast. I'm George Norrie with John Hoag tonight. John, you sent us, and I've been reading your 2010 predictions. It's 100+ pages that you have available on the internet, I guess, right?
Yes, it's an ebook, and it is part of my job as a prophecy scholar and interpreter and sometimes predictor of prophecies to try to predict the next trends. And several years ago, I began to write pretty much solely ebooks because I figured, I saw through working with prophecy that the delivery system for the future of writing was going to leave the dead trees and go into photons and electrons. And so as a way also to lower my carbon footprint as a writer and not take down so many forests with the paper books, now I try as much as I can to write electronic books, which you can get at hogprophecy.com. And it's a little busy right now, so if you want to try tomorrow, it'll be there. And you can download the book immediately to your computer. And it would sound like what Steve Jobs presented today.
Perfect, right?
Is exactly the thing that I've been seeing happening is a little template that is about the size of a book that can do a multi-number of tasks like a large iPod, but it can also, this will be the salvation of newspapers, magazines, and books. I know something about economic depressions because I'm a writer, a professional writer, and I can tell you, as any professional writer will, that this crisis of the publishing industry began in the early part of the last decade.
Yeah.
And it is so, it's almost like now everybody's joining us who are writers. But I also see that the Wild Wild West sensation or reality of the internet is going to settle down. And very soon, the instant payment delivery technology with such templates like what Steve Jobs has created is going to see much of our discourse and our economy move into cyberspace in the next 3 years in a big way.
Let's get into a glimpse of 2010, John. You have predicted how many presidents now over the past few years?
I think it's been 11. It was all the way back to 1968 with Richard Nixon winning against Humphreys. So I have been, actually, I recorded my first impressions of Barack Obama being president when I saw him in 2004 in the keynote speech in the Democratic Convention. I said, I got this vision of the Black Kennedy. And I got it again in 2006 when he visited Kenya, and it was they showed him coming out of the plane, this feeling of the hand of destiny on him. But I also felt another concern, which I voiced on your show all the way back in early January of 2008, right when the primary was beginning. I wrote about a article that I put together. I'm probably the first person to coin the word Obama Nation.
Oh, that's true, which has been taken since then. Right?
Yeah. And I went and studied when the word first emanated, and it looked like it was in March of 2007 when I wrote Obama Nation, which is on my HogueProphecy.com blog archive. And I said on your show way back there a little later in January 8th, or around January, late January of 2008, that I saw Obama, if he became president in 2008, I knew he was going to be a president, but the question was when. And the strong sense I got that if he became president in 2008, he ran the danger of coming to his destiny too soon, that his destiny was supposed to be 2012 or 2016.
So you think he was going to peak out too early?
Yes. People in prophecy shows that people sometimes come to their destiny too soon or too late. For instance, give you an example, his chief rival for the presidency, John McCain, his destiny window was 2000. So, but he finally got a chance to run for president 8 years too late.
Yeah, he got into the game way too late.
And Obama is in a better position to be somebody who's coming in too soon because he's on his apogee, he's on his rise. But I did say, and I'll quote it here in prediction for 2008, which was 2 years ago, I said, if Obama should win the Democratic nomination and be elected president of the United States in 2008, his unripened entry into the White House would be too soon and soon tragic. If you thought the Bush years were a disaster, you do not want to initiate the Obama nation timeline with your vote. His time isn't now.
Yet in spite of that, you're predicting...
He will be a great president later is the last line of that quote. And I went on to say, and this goes against my own personal views, but I have to honor this thing that has been accurate. I know he's going to be a two-term president. And it seems sometimes impossible to see how.
Well, the wonders of tape, John Hogue, we've got you on tape now.
You've got me on tape.
We're bringing you back way before that, but in 2012, we're bringing you back again.
Yeah, and I can only think that the only way that that can happen now is that one of two things happens. Either Obama becomes a spokesman for the Americans who feel disconnected with Washington and does what Ronald Reagan did so successfully when Congress went against him. Ronald Reagan got the American people behind him.
Sure.
And pressured the people, with the people's pressure, he pressured what was most of his presidency a Democrat-controlled Senate and House. He got things through.
But he seemed to get the things through that people wanted.
Well, he listened to what people, for better or worse, were into and wanted at that time.
Yeah.
I do not sense that Barack Obama is showing his inexperience. He's not in tune with his destiny, and he's not in tune with really where people are at. He's cerebral about it, but not really compassionate about it. And there's an astrological reason for this. His presidency was conceived on that November night in the election and then consummated into reality, birthed in 21st of January, around the late January of 2009. Both times he was under the influence of a Saturn-Uranus opposition.
Now, what does that mean?
That means tug of war between the status quo versus change.
Ah.
And this defines his first term. He cannot get out from under this. The one thing that can help is when this very powerful opposition, tug of war, moves in this new year into a little bit of around between May through August. You're going to get a glimpse of what the last bulk of the last 8 years of the decade is going to be like, because it's going to make it in layman's terms, it's going to move out of that intractable position and lean more towards going forward into change.
For him to get reelected in 2012, based on your predictions, he would have to have a dramatic shift over the next few years that the massive amounts of American public would just be enthralled with, I assume.
Well,
when do we see this, John?
Well, I don't think we're going to see it this year. In fact, you know, I've often said that there's a certain Lincoln-esque karma about Barack Obama's future. And in the book, I said, you know, if we were back in a time machine and we went back and interviewed people at the end of President Lincoln's first year in office and compared what people felt about Barack Obama to President Lincoln, they would feel a whole lot more positive about Barack Obama than President Lincoln, because a lot of people at that time thought that his inexperience and his statements early on in his presidency actually gathered many more states to join the Confederacy, including the state and the man that he wanted to pick to run the Union forces, Robert E. Lee. Virginia also went over the Confederacy, and a lot of people at the time were thinking President Lincoln, by misspeaking and drumming up the passions in his early speeches, actually caused the deaths of hundreds of thousands of more people in this Civil War. So, but if you had told people at the end of 1861 or early 1862 that the future Americans would be thinking of President Lincoln as one of the greatest presidents in our history, they would laugh you out of Washington. But that happened.
That happened. That's
and
right.
It happened mostly in what was a disastrous, full of military disasters and setbacks and bloodshed, a disastrous first term. But at the very end, towards the elections, things slowly, Lincoln was tinkering with how to win the war like Barack Obama is going to be tinkering with how to turn the economy around. And rather than firing generals here and left, he may be firing Geithner and then firing his replacement and firing his replacement until he finally hears somebody who gets out of the dogma and starts thinking like a person in the Aquarian age, which means change.
Where does Hillary Clinton fit into this? Is she going to pop up all of a sudden?
Well, it's funny because the two of them had presidency in their destiny. And I kind of rather famously got into a lot of criticism for saying that I thought that Hillary Clinton was going to be the president.
Yes.
And I was wrong about that. And Obama surged up and took it over. But the thing I couldn't shake was that they were going to be a dream team. Even when she didn't get the vice presidency, I couldn't shake this strong message of saying, this is weird, but they are going to be a really hot team anyway. And then look what happened after he was elected. He, to even her surprise, he chose her to be the Secretary of State, which in a way puts her in a position of a lot more influence in the legacy of his presidency related to the world in this unique crisis-filled time. Than if she had been vice president.
I find it interesting that she was in London during his first State of the Union address. Kind of distance, or maybe she had to really be away?
Well, no, she. I think that there was already work, and she was already going to work unofficially. I think she was already, there were some developments happening where the Iranians were beginning to open up. There was a conference, I think, around that time.
Yeah.
And I think she was actually working. And that's the other thing that's rather surprising about this year we're entering. I call this year in the book Predictions for 2010 a wild card year in prophecy. But there are, it's like if Nostradamus looked like Gomer Pyle, he'd be saying, surprise, surprise, surprise. It's like when you get up every morning, you prepare yourself for the world to have changed. This is very Aquarian age stuff.
Well, you talk about change, John. I left St. Louis. It was 5 degrees, and then I come back to 5 days of a mini monsoon in Los Angeles. This planet is going through an incredible series of Earth changes.
It is.
And you've predicted even more.
Yes. Unfortunately, my track record when it comes to predictions about climate change, every year gets more accurate. I'm not happy about that because it's getting worse.
I'd like you to be wrong on most of them, but you're not.
I'm not, and I don't know where I get that with the weather. I guess I'm weather sensitive, but I didn't think it would go that far. The you know, it's documented in my books that and for predictions for 2009, I had almost 100% accuracy on anything I mentioned about the weather and extremes that are coming. Even with 2010, which I actually signed off and sealed on All Souls Day, November 1st, 2009. So the predictions start going from November 1st on, and already sealed and documented what I said in the book, that you would start 2010 with record blizzards and cold snaps. And you would think, with all the rain that's falling in the West, where it's so parched, that you would not have a fire season that's that serious, but you would have one that would actually transcend 2008.
How about the earthquake? Do you see it here for Southern California?
The major areas of concern are, for me, are closer to the border with Mexico. In 2008, I talked about it more towards behind San Diego, and then there was that volcano that then became active in Mexicali that had been dormant for a long time. So my sense is something may be coming in Los Angeles, but I'm also sensing it for China again and India. The thing that's coming is a dramatic spike in climate-related and earthquake and other natural disasters. And unfortunately, I was saying that in the book, and then look, I was in Mexico City doing something for History Channel. The day that I got there was the day that the Haitian quake hit.
Yes.
And unfortunately, that's we do not live in a fishbowl with just our own views. We do not live like people in the House and the Senate and executive branch who see the world within their little Capitol building as the way the world is. The world that we live in is interconnected, not just between each other, but with the animals, with the stars, with the planet. And the things that are going on in our evolutionary crisis are also affecting what's going on in the earth, in the seas, in the reality of our corner of the universe.
John, why are things so intense? And by that I mean, when we have trouble with the economy, it's not just a little bit of trouble, it's intense. When we have earthquakes, they're intense. When we have floods, they're intense. What's happening? Why are things so intense?
What I think is happening is that we have entered something I've been saying for 30 years, that once the year 2000 passes, we enter in the 21st century, we're entering 100 years of evolutionary travail and crisis. We're entering the birthing of a new humanity and a new world. And it's not going to be the way it's been dogmatically preached by many different religions as some doomsday where some guy comes out of a cloud and saves everybody from themselves. That's a very Piscean age projection on a very un-Piscean, more scientific, rational Aquarian age. It is intense because we are like the whole planet and ourselves are like a mother giving birth to something. This is the contractions of the birth. You have so many cycles.
Get the epidural then.
We have so many cycles of time and prophecy that are rebooting right now in the next 30-year period. And even though Roland Emmerich and Hollywood gets all excited about 2012, thank goodness it's the last doomsday date that people can get kind of chicken little-ish on. And once that passes, people are going to have to take a look at the future as it is coming at them every moment. Because the Aquarian age is on, and it's going to be a time when we have to, especially now in astrology, for the next 18 or so years, we have a thing going on in layman's terms, which hasn't gone on since there was revolutions in America in 1770s.
Let's talk more about your predictions for 2009, John, when we come back, and also some of Nostradamus' predictions. And then in our final hour with John Hogue, we'll take your phone calls. I'm George Norrie. Don't touch your dial. We'll be right back on Coast to Coast AM.